Hi, everyone. This is Roni Gazit from Bicom. Thank you for joining us for our 80th episode of this podcast. And today I am delighted to be joined by James Serene, Bicom's CEO, to discuss our most recent publication, which is our 2019 Populace survey, which examines the UK public's attitude towards Israel and the Middle East. So thank you for joining, James.
Thank you. It's very good to be here in my office with you.
So let's just get started, and maybe you can give us a brief overview of the big picture of this survey. What are some of the things that stand out to you in terms of the trends and anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah, so some of our listeners will be familiar with this who've been following Bicom's publications for a while. Some others maybe not, but this is now the fourth year that we have run this poll since I've been CEO. It's a poll that's been going on for a very long time, since 2006. So one thing we have, which is really important with this, is consistency. So we've been asking the same questions for a long time. And together with the polling company Populace, and we'll be speaking to Rick Nye, who's the head of Populace, about his thoughts on the poll shortly. But we've been running the poll with the same company, the same questions. It's a 2,000-person sample that's representative of the UK public. So it gives us a really good big picture sense of what does the UK public think about Israel. Up until last year, we stopped doing it this year, but we used to ask a question of like, how interested actually are you in the Middle East? And one of the things about that that was quite revealing was it was only something like 20% of people that were really interested when it's not in the news. When it's in the news, you get something like another 20-30%. But really, there's a lot of people that are not actually that interested in the Middle East. And there's probably only about 18-20% of the real Middle East geeks that are following all these stories, even when they're not in the news. The big indicator that we ask is to say, how warm do you feel towards certain countries and actors and groups in the Middle East? And the ones that we zoom in on are the answers around Israel, the Palestinians, and others. Now, to be clear, this is not an either or. There are some American surveys that say, who do you prefer, or who do you support, Israel or the Palestinians? That's a very kind of divisive asking you to pick a side. So we don't do that, and I should be really clear, we don't do that. We ask, how warm do you feel towards these different groups? And the finding that we've been getting almost consistently for the last 5 years is Israel and the Palestinians are both at around 20% of people saying they feel warm to them. So one in five of people are saying they feel warm towards Israel. One in five are like saying they feel warm towards the Palestinians. That has not really changed for a long time. And the thing that's interesting about that is a lot have happened over the last few years. And we've seen big military operations like Operation Protective Edge in 2014. We saw big violence on the Gaza border in 2018. We've seen a lot of things happen, and the dial has not really shifted either way. It's stayed around 20%. But a big thing that did happen is something went on between 2006 to 2009, where there was quite high support, warmth towards Israel and the Palestinians. Like Israel was at around 35% then, and the Palestinians were around 29%. And both of those have dropped off significantly. And we're now looking at both being very consistent at around 20%. The other thing that we ask, which is a really good measure, is we're trying to find out whether people support boycotts of Israel. And we have this question where we ask them to agree or disagree with a statement: I don't support boycotts of Israel. I don't understand other people that do, given everything else that's going on in the world. And we've had a very consistent finding ever since we've been asking that question for the last 5 years. Something like 45 to 50% of people consistently say that they do not support boycotts. They agree with that statement. And we've only seen this year's like 14% of people saying they disagree. That means you can infer they support boycotts. And that number has not changed. Both of those are very consistent.
Now, you mentioned that you measure warmth towards Israel and the Palestinians and other countries as well. Can you talk about interesting trends that you've seen in warmth towards other countries in the Middle East, and if there's something that stands out in the poll that was conducted this year?
Yeah, so it's good that you ask that. I mean, most of those are pretty consistent. We saw, I mean, it's just a random thing to throw in, but it shows how it changes. But we saw that the warmth towards Russia among the UK public dropped off a cliff last year, and that was because everyone was hearing news about the Skripal poisoning and everything that happened there. So that was absolutely logical. What we saw this year is really interesting, is that warmth towards Turkey has decreased very significantly from 24% last year to just 16% this year, which is the lowest rating for Turkey since the survey began, which just shows that there can be a situation where a world event that is very high profile can really affect people's perception. And it's no surprise, the survey was carried out between like November the 1st to the 3rd. And around that time, there was a huge amount of news coverage of basically Turkey invading northern Syria. And a lot of people saying that was a really bad thing for Turkey to have done. So that finding is not necessarily surprising.
And one of the other things that the survey does ask is looking at different partners in the Middle East, for instance, and the importance of these allies or countries in a post-Brexit world. And one of the questions is specifically on trade and to the extent to which people view these countries as important trade partners. Yeah. Can you talk about that and where Israel falls into that and how that trend has progressed, you know, between last year and this year?
Yeah, so we've only been asking this question for a few years, but what is quite interesting is that we give people a number of countries to express whether they believe it's an important trade partner or not. And we ask about Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Israel, Turkey, Egypt, and Iran. And the British public are actually quite on the money, if you excuse the pun. They pretty much guess by volume of trade actually where these countries are, I think with the exception of maybe one or two. But they rank Saudi Arabia, interestingly, as the most important, with the highest number of people saying that it's an important trading partner at 48%. That's gone down a little bit over the last year. Qatar is in second at 37%, Israel third in 36%, Turkey 31%, and so on. So the British public kind of, interestingly for Saudi Arabia, they actually rate Saudi Arabia pretty highly as an important trading partner after Brexit. There's another question that we ask, which is around the sense of which countries you consider in the Middle East to be important allies in the fight against terrorism. And Israel gets a consistently high rating on that, 44% agreeing that Israel is an important ally of Britain in the fight against terrorism. After that, Saudi Arabia, then Turkey, etc. But it's interesting that, you know, all that, I suppose, messaging around Israel and defense and intelligence ties and, you know, counterterrorism and Israel and, you know, Israeli people saying that, you know, they're helping with intelligence with the UK. Some of that is kind of cutting through because there's certainly quite a high perception of Israel as an ally when it comes to counterterrorism.
And especially compared to all the other Middle Eastern countries, Israel is consistently ranked as being the most important
by comparison. It's been, absolutely, for the last few years, yeah.
Yeah. So similar to that, one of the other questions that we ask in the survey has to do with threats to the UK or perceptions of threats to the UK. Can you talk about any interesting trends you've seen with that?
Yeah, I mean, so we asked people to rate in the survey what of these countries and groups are threats to the UK. And we've seen actually in many ways a bit of a downward trend on that. I mean, we've been asking about ISIS, obviously, for a few years. And there was a point a few years ago where ISIS was seen as, you know, the number one threat to the UK. It's no surprise that that's consistently decreased as ISIS has been in the news less and people have talked more about defeating ISIS. But one thing that happened this year that was quite significant is that 20% of people believe that Iran is a significant threat to the security of the UK. Now, what had been happening on this particular question, actually since 2015, when the UK signed the nuclear deal with Iran and the other countries, was that the perception of Iran as a significant threat to the security of the UK had been consistently decreasing. And I think some of that comes from messaging from, you know, British Prime Minister, Foreign Secretary and others who are kind of saying, you know, now we've signed this deal with Iran and they're talking less about Iran as a threat. UK opening an embassy in Tehran. And I think that general mood music around Iran was that, you know, it's not one of the bad guys. But what we've seen over the last year is a significant increase, 4 percentage points compared to 2018, now up to 20% of people, 1 in 5, saying that Iran is a significant threat to the security of the UK. Now, I can't infer whether that is entirely down to people hearing about Iranian attacks on Saudi oil facilities or Iran being blamed, or whether that's the news over the summer where we had British flagged ships under threat and the Stena Impero tanker that was impounded by Iranian forces, and you know, there's a lot of news around British Navy ships in the Gulf trying to deal with that. I don't know if that really had that impact, or it was a wider sense of what was going on, what the US and others were saying. But yeah, definitely there's been an increase there, more people now seeing Iran as a threat to the UK.
So we've discussed at length here overall trends that we see in the UK public in general. But can you speak specifically to specific groups within the public, whether it's, you know, political affiliation or the age groups, and any interesting trends you've seen emerge within those groups in this survey and compared to previous years?
I mean, there is a very interesting difference between what we call the millennials and the Cold War generation. So the millennials are like those born after 1980, and the Cold War, obviously, you know, the older group. And on a lot of the questions, particularly around threats to security, around boycotts of Israel and others, there is quite a big difference between the Cold War generation and the millennials. The millennials generally, you know, more skeptical about a lot of these security arguments than the Cold War generation, who generally are kind of more supportive of Israel, more opposed boycotts of Israel. But I think the most stark thing that we found this year, which is most revealing, is that you are able in this survey to cut the findings based around political support. So you can imagine what I'm going to say next, that we looked at what the trend was for Labour supporters in the survey since 2015. And you can guess where this is going. So what we found is that, Labour supporters in 2014, their warmth towards Israel was at around 24%. And by 2019, 5 years later, that is significantly decreased to just 9%. When we look at their warmth towards Palestinians, that has increased from 31% in 2014 to 36% in 2019. When we look at those who are asked whether Israel is an important ally in the fight against terrorism, in just 1 year, that has decreased from 47% to 35%. So that's a 12% decrease in people thinking that Israel is an important ally in the fight against terrorism. And the most interesting one there is when we ask about a boycott of Israel. So 14% of Labour supporters in 2014 disagreed with our statement about boycotts. Therefore, we infer they support boycotts. That has increased by 10% to 24% in 2019. So there's a really solid picture there about Labour supporters and their views towards Israel. Now, I should explain that we're asking about voting intention. So it's not necessarily the same people that have changed their views. It could be that there are just different groups of Labour supporters in our poll. So it could be either that, you know, some Labour supporters have changed their views, or that the now Labour supporters in 2019 are different people and they have much more hawkish views towards Israel, against Israel. But that's a really significant trend. And when we look at the Conservatives, they're basically flat, or some of them have increased their support for Israel. When we look at Lib Dems, interestingly, on some of the measures, they have actually increased their support for Israel and against boycotts. But it's really a very, very sharp trend among Labour supporters. But I think anybody who's been following the whole saga about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, his past, EHRC investigating Labour, and the Labour manifesto commitments towards Israel, none of that would be surprising. But I think when we looked at the figures, even we were surprised by just how sharp some of those changes have been.
Great. Well, are there any last comments you'd like to leave us with about what this means, where we're going?
Well, I would caution, and I end up presenting these findings to many, many hundreds of people around the country and abroad, because people are always interested in public opinion polls and where these kind of trends are going. And I speak to a lot of audiences about it. And the first thing I also have to say is, obviously, it's just a poll. It gives us a snapshot. This is not, you know, like a scientific measurement of exactly what everyone thinks. It's a snapshot of 2,000 people. But it's a really good way of looking at the trends. And we ask about some of these big issues and we do get a really good sense of where those trends are going. I mean, I think, you know, the big thing to say is just that it's very, very stable. You know, in terms of the support for Israel and the Palestinians, it's about 1 in 5. And then once you start to ask questions about boycotts, is hating Israel and questioning its right to exist anti-Semitic, you start to move up to near 50%. So the kind of people who are sympathetic to Israel and its cause moves up to near 50%, even though about 20% say they feel warm to Israel. And that's really interesting to analyze that. But I think what I would encourage our listeners to do is go online, look at our website and do kind of peruse the polls and look at some of the detail, because it really is worth getting into.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, James.
Thank you very much. So for this part of the podcast, myself, James Serene, I will be speaking to Rick Nye, who's the Principal and Strategy Director at Populous Polling. Rick, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
So Rick has been working on this poll commissioned by BICOM on UK attitudes towards Israel and the Middle East for a number of years. So he's the perfect person to talk to us about what he sees as the big trends behind the numbers. So I'm going to throw out a bit of an open question right at the beginning and say, what struck you about the poll this year?
I think what's most interesting is that a lot of the numbers haven't changed very much overall. And actually, if you look back, I mean, this is going to be the last time you run these set of questions this decade. Mm-hmm. And you've been running some of these questions since 2011. So we now have almost a decade's worth of results. And there's been a remarkable degree of stability across the years, across the population as a whole. But what you do see this year is that the way people express themselves in terms of how they're going to vote at the general election is becoming more closely aligned, certainly when it comes to Labour voters, with a set of attitudes and assumptions about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, which is expressed in this poll. So they are more likely to be warm towards the Palestinians, less likely to be warm towards Israel, more likely to support BDS. That alignment between those kinds of attitudes on those issues and what they're going to do in the general election is much closer than it's been in previous years.
So I was talking about some of those really stark differences over the last 5 years that we've seen in a lot more detail. And I think it's interesting that you say it like that. It's about the attitudes, because clearly we're not talking about the same people. We're talking about the attitudes, because, you know, it's not necessarily the same people.
I mean, each year we're interviewing a fresh nationally representative sample. And as I say, the trend across the population as a whole is quite stable on most of the questions that we ask. But what's interesting is when you look at the cross breaks, as we call them, when you cross-reference them against what people say they're going to do when it comes to voting in the general election, there's a much clearer alignment between supporting Labour and having some more negative attitudes towards Israel and some of the questions that we ask here than has been the case in previous years.
Mm. And some of those shifts, I mean, are really big. I mean, we had, 25% warm towards Israel among Labour supporters in 2014, and that's gone down to 9% this year. So it's a really big shift.
Yes, yeah, so what that's suggesting is that whatever the forces are that are dividing the country in terms of how it's going to vote in the general election are more closely aligning with the divisions over attitudes towards the Middle East and the conflict between the Palestinians and Israel on the other hand. And there's just a closer correlation between those two things than there used to be.
Yeah. And what are the other things that you see in terms of some of the big difference in the poll?
Well, I think it's interesting to note that across the decade, the numbers of people who support Israel's right to exist have remained broadly consistent. Mm. However, within that part of the population, the number who now say that that depends on there being a two-state solution, that share of, if you like, the pro-Israel part of the population has grown since 2011. Yeah, it used to be about 50-50, now it's closer to 60-40. So increasingly, the people who support Israel's right to exist do so, but only on the basis that they're serious about a two-state solution. And that has changed, and shifted over the decades since we first started asking the question.
Is that a sort of deep sense of when people are looking at a conflict here, like they want it solved? I mean, there's a very strong narrative always. I mean, I used to work in government and work a lot with the Foreign Office, and there was always this narrative that whenever there was a conflict, we just wanted it solved, we wanted it done, we were very uncomfortable with it continuing. And do you think that sort of permeates down, that's part of it?
I mean, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that most of the public most of the time is not paying any attention to this issue whatsoever. We obviously then ask them about the conflict, and it remains the case that the overwhelming majority of people blame both sides for the continuation of the conflict. But it's also been the case consistently that among those who blame one side or the other, more blame Israel than the Palestinians. And certainly from the focus group work that we've done for BICOM in the past, we know that people think that because Israel holds all the cards, if you like, the onus is on them to try and break the deadlock, if the deadlock can be broken.
There's two little trends that we were talking about earlier that have been interesting this year, and I'll be interested to know whether you think that they are significant and how much we read into them. So one is that on the question where we ask about warmth, the warmth towards Turkey has gone down significantly this year by about 8%, and the perception of Iran as a threat to the security of the UK has increased by 4%. And I just wonder, you can look at that very superficially and go, Turkey invaded Syria just before this poll was asked, and Iran has been doing all sorts of stuff in the Gulf over the summer. Does that break through? Or what would you think about those little blips that we've seen in the survey?
I mean, first of all, I think you've got to get into context. Some of that can be sampling error, right? Some of that's within the margin of error. Beyond that, I think it's less about people paying attention to precise events in the news, and it's more about the general impression that they get. So for instance, since the US pulled out of the nuclear deal, is the chance of Iran being a conflict which somehow drags the UK in? Or it could be about Nazarene and Zahari Ratcliffe. It could be about a number of things, but just the perception that over this year there is a vague sense in which Iran's been in the news more. And we do know this from our research from you, that whenever one of the Middle East actors is in the news, it's normally bad news when it comes to how people feel towards them and whether they feel warm towards them or not. If it's made the news, it's usually for the wrong reasons. And if it's stayed in the news, it normally results in people being less warm towards the actors concerned.
Another question I wanted to ask you, which, forgive me if this goes too far back, but I mean, there's a trend in the survey we've been asking since 2006 about warmth towards Israel and the Palestinians. And there was a very big decrease in warmth towards Israel and the Palestinians between 2006 and 2009. 2006, Israel was at about 35, Palestinians were about 29. And then we've had the last 5 years, they're just stuck at 20. Is there anything that you want to try and proffer as an explanation about why there was that big decrease in support and why it just hasn't changed?
Well, I think you've got to be quite careful. Sometime around 2010, we changed from asking the question on the phone to asking it online. And certainly our experience with other questions of a similar sort is where you don't have a person that you're having to say things to, you are more likely to be forthright in your opinions, particularly if they're at one extreme or the other. But the other thing I would say is the reason why they're stuck is, what's changed? In the outside world, away from people who live and breathe it and know about it and care about it intimately, what has changed in the Palestinian-Israel conflict in the last decade? And the answer is, to all intents and purposes, as far as the outside world is concerned, very little, and therefore the ratings have changed very little.
And on some of the questions around boycott and warmth and perceiving a threat, I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about the difference between the Cold War generation and the millennials. So the millennials being what the sort of 1980 born after and the Cold War much older. What do you see as that split through this survey and how it compares with other surveys?
I think it just means that there is a different context, a different way in which people view the world depending on what their formative experiences were when they were growing up. I mean, for instance, at the election next week, you will have people voting for the first time who were actually born after 9/11 happened. Mm. So their difference, their experiences, their context, much different to people who never really experienced the Cold War or whose formative years came after the Cold War. And because of that, people tend to frame issues differently, particularly issues when it comes to geopolitics when they think about them. So, yeah, if you are a member of the Cold War generation, people roughly speaking 45 and over, then you're more likely to think of something that is coherent, that is called the West. You're more likely to have a warmer opinion of people who you think are on your side, even if they're experiencing difficulties or they're not necessarily the kind of government that you would back as your own. That spills over into how warm people feel towards Israel. It spills over into how people feel about Israel's right to exist. It spills over into attitudes towards related issues like, for instance, BDS. Mm-hmm. The people who are older are much more instinctively sympathetic towards Israel, not every person over the age of 45, but in general, than people who are younger than that. And you know, that reflects a number of things. As I say, it reflects the circumstances in which they grew up. It may also reflect the demographic composition of those age groups. For instance, you know, minorities are far more likely to be prevalent among age cohorts below the age of 45 than they are among older people. Mm-hmm. And so it's a variety of factors. But what you're also seeing, certainly what you saw during Brexit and what you've seen in subsequent general elections, you saw in 2017, you may well see again next Thursday, is that the alignment between generations and political outlook has once again become more closely correlated.
Do you think that there's, I mean, a lot of the stuff in this survey is about perception of like a military threat, about how dangerous groups are. A lot of that also is probably based on whether you trust your national leaders to tell you about that threat, whether you trust your sort of security agencies to do that. Do you think that there's a sense here as well of like a younger generation that grew up in the shadow, I'm not talking about the very young, but the sort of like younger, that grew up in the shadow of the Iraq war, that they are just much more sceptical about value of military conflict and the sense of threat perception when it's advised by officials in government? I mean, do you read that into it a little bit?
I mean, it is certainly true that how old you are is related to, you know, your willingness to believe assurances or perceptions of threat from what you might call established sources. Now, that doesn't have to be the government. That could be the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. That could be, you know, figures of authority of any kind. Mm-hmm. There is certainly a scepticism among younger people. That also reflects a fragmentation of how people get their information, which is present for everybody, but is more pronounced among younger people in terms of, you know, they're not all getting their news from the BBC at 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're getting it from a wide range of sources. But I think, you know, different age groups have different peculiarities. I mean, for instance, you look at something like data. Young people very pretty relaxed about companies using their data in return for free stuff, but neuralgic about establishment figures, authorities, government agencies using that data to protect national security. Mm. You talk to older people, it's completely the other way around. Yeah. You know, national security, fine. You know, the innocent have nothing to fear, but companies using private data about me to sell me things that I might want. Mm. If I know about that, I'm much, much less easy about it.
Mm. I mean, there's an interesting question in one of the bits of the poll where we talk about asking people to rate their perception of the threat to Israel from various actors. And there's a huge difference between the millennials and the Cold War generation when it comes to asking them if groups like Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran are a threat to Israel. Now, I know what you said before about a lot of people don't know, so you're taking a bit of a leap. Do people in the survey even know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah, etc.? You know, it is all quite complex if you're not close to it. But the differences are very stark, and you've got something like some of these questions, you've got somewhere like 50%+ of the Cold War saying, yes, they're a threat to Israel, and you've got like the millennials in like the teens. And that's extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah to have a view on whether they're good guys or bad guys. And I think over the age of 45, people say, well, they're terrorist organisations, so they must be bad. Israel, Western-style democracy, has its problems but must be good. And they answer the question accordingly. I think if you are younger, you will not necessarily have those same reflexes either way. You won't automatically assume that Israel's a good guy because it's a Western-style democracy, even if it has problems. You'll judge it by its conduct or how it treats its religious minorities and the fact that the Palestinians don't have a state, for instance. Similarly, just because somebody has decreed in authority that Hamas or Hezbollah are a terrorist organisation doesn't mean that you as a young person will write them off. But it's also the case that I think if you were younger, you are also more likely to say you don't know, because you won't actually have formed a view yet.
Rick, thank you so much. I want to just throw a really unfair question and just say, what's going to happen in the election and what do you think we should be looking out for? Because, I mean, a lot of people are talking about narrowing in the polls in the UK. I mean, do people even trust the polls at the moment? I mean, I think it's looking a bit confused, isn't it? It's narrowing and we're not quite sure where it's going. What would you advise the sort of listeners to do over the next week in terms of how they read the polls?
I think what you're likely to see over the final week of the campaign is you're likely to see the Tory lead over Labour narrowing. That's what happened in 2017 as well. I think that's it's a reflection of a number of things. I think it's a reflection of the fact that people who were at the start of the campaign who would otherwise have voted Labour saying they were less sure that they would do that this time, suddenly deciding that whatever they do, they really can't bring themselves to vote Conservative, for instance. I think just because the election was caused by Brexit doesn't therefore mean that people are going to vote on the basis of Brexit, and the uptick in Labour support has coincided with Labour actually being quite successful at putting the focus on the health service cuts, an end to austerity, which admittedly is what they tried to do in 2017 and did quite successfully then as well. But every time the campaign shifts away from Brexit, that's good news for Labour and not necessarily good news for the Conservatives. Because of the way votes translate into seats and in different parts of the country, that will happen in different ways. You know, anything which shows a Conservative lead of 6 or below begins to look perilously close to hung parliament territory. But ultimately, the election is going to be decided at the margins by those seats that don't necessarily conform to national trends, whether it's because there's tactical voting or a particularly compelling local candidate. I think it's going to be quite tight. And the honest answer is nobody knows what the actual outcome is. And if I did, I'd be on a beach at the moment not talking to you.
Rick Nye from Populous, thank you very much for joining us.